Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time. Welcome to part two of the June 20th podcast. We are going to be talking about the CBA and a bunch of other things as well. David West, the other types of contracts, then people who will be opting out and opting in, whether we will be seeing any of players like Marco Bellinelli back again. So, Michael, the first thing you wanted to talk about was the CBA, correct?
I mean, I think we could talk about the CBA forever, but what interested me most is in these last couple of days, the owners just came through and they said that they're fine with backing off their stance of essentially demanding that contracts are no longer guaranteed moving forward. I think essentially what the owners are saying is, fine, we'll offer you guaranteed contracts. They're just going to be far less than they have in the past. If we have a $45 million hard cap, mm-hmm. you know, these we're not going to be giving out Stojakovic-type deals anymore because we simply won't have the room for it. So I find it interesting that it really seems like they want to get a deal done before the deadline, and that absolutely shocks me.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too. But again, I mean, even the Billy Hunter, who's the rep for the players union, he even said something about how we were surprised they backed off of that so quickly. But it doesn't really matter as long as they're still insisting on a low hard cap, and we're still a couple hundred million dollars apart, and how much we're going to pay the players.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, you can say, oh, yeah, your contracts are guaranteed, but if, the piece of the pie is that much less than it used to be, it doesn't really matter.
Right, then it's essentially the same thing. But, so that'll be interesting. But, I mean, any gut feelings how these next 12 days are going to play out and then whether or not we go into it, I mean, if I were to say to you, give me a percentage on door number one is a lockout. Door number two is they get this settled before July 1st and we have pretty much a regular off season. Or door number three is basically they have an extension similar to what the NFL did, where, they have an extension for a couple of weeks to continue negotiation. What percentages would you give on each door?
I don't really understand the point of the extension, honestly. So I'm actually going to say, and this might surprise you, I think there's an 80% chance there's a lockout.
Just 80?
Yeah. I mean, if you had asked me that 3 days ago, I would have said 98% chance there was a lockout. And maybe I'm just being optimistic because, you know, the owners are giving on a few of their pet things. But four chances out of five, there's going to be a lockout. And, I mean, it's going to be over just the total amount of money. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to in the end. Total amount of money. How much these players are getting paid, total.
Yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth. I mean, I would have said 100% probably up until about a week ago, and now I back off that number a little bit. But yeah, Tuesday is going to be the big day. It'll be the day that they say is pretty much going to be the make or break day. But I just, you know, to me, they've got to capitalize on this momentum. They've got to capitalize on the fact that the NFL has basically shot itself in the foot. You just can't possibly have had the best playoffs in the last probably 15 years or so. You have this perfect heel. I mean, to me, this is a horrible analogy, but it's almost like basically Heath Ledger ending, I guess it wasn't suicide, but Heath Ledger dying after Batman. You have maybe one of the greatest heels in history, and now you're not going to be able to see him again. I don't know. I don't like where that's heading. I think there's so much incentive for them to save this, even more than the NFL, because people were going to come back to the NFL regardless.
Yeah.
The NBA can't afford this, so the CBA might force us to have a lockout in 12 days, but before then, we will get some answers. We got a draft coming up. We have the Hornets have some possible team options to exercise and qualifying offers. Also, a couple of pretty big players on the team have player options available of all of those things Hornets related that we'll see over the next 12 days. What kind of intrigues you the most?
Honestly, it's Belly. Belly's the only one that really intrigues me the most.
Really?
Yeah. David West, I mean, I think you feel the same way. It's kind of a given which way he's going to jump. I think it's a given which way Aaron Gray should jump. And Smith or Anderson, I mean, I don't see a reason why you would retain them. So that leaves Belly. And so Belly's the one I'm interested in. I want to see if they feel that he is good enough to pay him $3.2 million, I think, qualifying.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I feel he is. Probably he is. Maybe. That's the kind of thing. I just want to see where they're thinking. Because honestly, that decision, if they pick up Belly or they don't pick up Belly, if they don't pick him up, I think that they have something in mind that they're pursuing really hard and they think they're going to get it done, which is exciting to me.
Well, the other thing that people haven't really talked about that the Hornets could do, that would be kind of a jerk move, but you know, as well within their rights, is they could extend Bellinelli the qualifying offer and then pull it off the table if something else comes up. So to me, if it's truly a 50-50 proposition of, whether they think they should do it or not, I think they would almost play their hand in that direction and then and pull the offer if something else came up. So, yeah, I agree. That's one. And then I guess just for the record, which way are you saying that you feel that David West is most likely to fall? I guess tell people about what his option is in case they don't know and then what you think he'll do.
All right, so David West has his player option, $7.5 million. He can come back next year. It's his choice whether he does that or not. He has until June 30th to make that decision. Everything I've seen actually appears to be saying that he's going to make that decision a week before his deadline, which is good for Dell, and it's probably a courtesy to Dell. So Dell knows what he's going to be doing in the draft and like that. But my opinion is he would be a fool to exercise that option to come back for $7.5 million next year.
Even with the fact that he, if the free agency market does open on July 1st, he obviously won't be at full strength physically or to show any things for teams. Teams won't know if he'll be able to start the season, you still think?
Well, I mean, so the way you have to look at it is if He does not exercise that option. He makes $7.5 million next year, which means that the risk is that he would be paid less than that, that somehow he would enter free agency and he would only be able to earn $7 million or $7 million a year for some number of years. I mean, even if you take that as the worst possible thing where somebody, the best offer he can find is something like, you know, 3 years, $21 million, so he's actually getting paid less per year, it's still $21 million. It's not $7.5 million. Because what if he can't come back from this injury? I know that's a horrible thing to think about, but what if he can't? And there's no way, I'm guaranteeing it right now, there is no way that he enters free agency and any of his year's salaries is less than $7.5 million.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree with you. It's, I guess people could play the card of, okay, but he could come back. So you're saying if you're his agent and his agent somehow knows, I'm not saying that agents do this and go through back channels, but the agent somehow knows that there's a 3-year, $21 million offer waiting for David West on July 1st, or whenever free agency opens, that as his agent, you would advise David West to opt out, you know, knowing that. I guess what people would say is, yeah, but David West could play it out, have another great year, which I think we both agree that overall, before he got hurt, last year was David West's best year.
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay. Has another year like that, and now he could be looking at, you know, a contract that averages in the $9-10 million range, but you don't think that the reward outweighs the risk in that scenario?
No, because I mean, if he could play out this year, come back, play hard enough, and somebody would give him a $15 million a year contract, then I think it's worth it. I just don't see that ever being David West's salary. He's not young enough. He's not going to be playing long enough for that. So, I mean, I'm thinking he's still looking at, essentially, if he comes out this year, even though he won't be playing for half the year, somebody will give him probably $10 million a year, maybe a little more. And I think next year, somebody will give him $10 million a year, maybe a little more. So why play at $7.5 million for a year? Or accept $7.5 million?
Okay, well, yeah, I'm not going to argue you. And, you know, from the little innuendos from David West on down to couple other things that I've been told here and there, I think it's pretty much assured that David West is not going to take that player option. So with that said, now we shift focus. I just asked you to put yourself in David West's agent's shoes. Now I put you in Dell Demps' shoes. How do you approach the situation? West comes to you the day before the draft, maybe 2 days before the draft, says, look, I'm going to opt out. Anything that I get on the market, I'll come to you with. If you guys match it, I would love to stay here. What's your game plan as Dell Demps moving forward with that information?
I draft a big man regardless in this draft.
Okay.
Actually, I can't even say that. So there's so many holes on this team still that, I mean, I would prefer to find somebody who can back up the power forward and center positions. But if there's a solid shooting guard that fell a bunch, I would go for a shooting guard too.
Yes, I don't mean just the draft. I mean, you're going to probably take best player at 45. But I mean, overall, what's your overall, if you were developing a business plan or something for this specific product, how do you handle David West moving forward? What are you willing to spend? What would you be willing to match? Would you just completely let go of his rights? So you could knock that off the cap immediately? I mean, what would be your plan moving forward with him?
Well, there's only one consideration I would make that would make me abandon David West as an option. If I had, and of course, like you said, not that they would ever do this, but I would try to find out if there was any possibility that if I renounced David West, that Nene would come to New Orleans. He's the only player in the free agent market who's a, you know, big man who I would just completely ignore David West in favor of. I mean, because we talked about Tyson briefly. Tyson doesn't play enough. He's still, I mean, despite having a good year, he still has a questionable injury history. So, I mean, Nene is the only player I would say, you know, I would rather have him for a lot of reasons than David West. So if I could find that Nene would at least give me a really good chance of signing him, I might consider just, you know, going the drop David West, go hard after Nene, and see what I have left over for Landry.
Okay, so you said that was the only way you would completely dump West. So if Nene can't come your way, you can't get somebody of that caliber, what are you willing to match salary-wise for David? I mean, are you basically, I'm guessing your philosophy is that you're pretty much all in on David West because you've said in the past that if David West goes, you can't envision a scenario in which Chris Paul stays. Is that right?
Correct. Unless you can bring in someone of comparable or better talent like Nene.
Okay. So you, so the New Jersey Russian billionaire throws West an offer of 4 years, $39 million under the new CBA, and David West comes to you and says, this is the offer I got. If you match it, I'll stay in New Orleans. You would match it?
Yeah.
And that number doesn't have a ceiling for you? Whatever that number is?
Oh, no, no, it definitely has a ceiling.
So what's that ceiling?
I wouldn't go much higher than $11 million a year on average across the life of the contract.
Okay, but you would go up to that.
Yeah. So about $44 million for a David West contract, I could see myself signing.
Okay. So David West, I mean, do you agree that as far as the Hornets offseason as a big picture, he's the key domino, or is there anything else that could fall that would be bigger than that?
Well, I don't see there's so much. That's a hard question. I mean, David West is a key domino, but I think Ariza is a key domino as well. Because I think you've even said that in one of your last posts, which is Del Dem says over and over again, the core of this team is West, Okafor, and Paul.
Right.
Which means Ariza is not part of the core of this team. So whatever happens with Ariza, I mean, whatever happens this offseason, I think Ariza is the best opportunity we have to package something to get better somewhere.
Do you think, before we explore that, do you think that there's any way, any scenario in which you could envision Trevor Ariza coming off the bench, or is he past that role right now in his NBA career?
I have a hard time seeing him accepting that easily or gracefully.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy takes too many damn shots, which is kind of it's just an indication of the kind of personality he is. He thinks of himself as a major, important, key player for a team, offensively and defensively. I don't think he'd accept sixth man, even if it was, you know, a 28-minute a game sixth man.
Yeah, and I mean, with Ariza, Jack, and then, you know, even a guy like Landry coming off the bench, you would have a bench that salary is, you know, probably more than most starting lineups that the Hornets have fielded in the past, and just something that a small market could hold on to. But yeah, I mean, to me, the frustrating thing is that there's so many quality small forwards available.
Yep.
There's so few quality shooting guards, and you know, the casual fan just says, well, move Ariza to shooting guard, or move this guy to shoot. Ariza, his numbers are horrible at shooting guard. Iguodala, if we get into him, shooting. I mean, that's just not as easily said as done.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically those are my two. Seeing what happens with them, and Belly, I think, is an indication of what's going to happen at the wing. But, yeah, the two dominoes are the two important players. Any rumors around them are the most important ones to me, or David West and our good buddy Ariza.
And how do you feel about Okafor? I mean, it seems like a lot of Hornets fans who are interested in Iguodala or Monte Ellis they think that Okafor is the piece. Okafor in Golden State, because Mike Malone just went there. He's a defensive coach. Okafor anchored the Hornets defense, so maybe Malone would put in a good word. Philadelphia, because their glaring hole is at center and they have enough wings so they can move Iguodala. Either of those trades appeal to you, where you make that move and then come back and find a center in free agency?
So I'll just say it one more time. Okafor is not, you're not going to get back the value you think you're going to get back for Okafor. And you're not going to ever be able to find an Okafor value player on the open market for any reasonable amount of money. You're going to pay the same amount of money you paid Okafor, and you may not even get Okafor. So,
right, but you're not going to find Iguodala. I mean, I guess the question is, would you rather have Iguodala and Samuel Dalembert or Okafor and one of your favorite players like J.R. Smith? I mean, it's not in a vacuum. If you could swap Okafor for Iguodala, which I don't know, that's a trade where I don't know if either team says yes. I think both teams might say no to that. But anyway, if you could do that, the thinking is then that, yeah, you're right. You're not going to get somebody as good as Okafor, but you're also not going to get somebody as good as Iguodala in the free agent market.
I wouldn't move Okafor.
Okay. All right, just...
I mean, it's just flat out. I mean, the only possible situation I would move Okafor was, again, if somehow I knew I was going to get Tyson Chandler. I mean, there aren't that many decent centers. They're very rare. So moving Okafor for anything, you got to. I mean, like I said, you can't get anything back that's comparable very easily. It's already a giant hole for the Hornets. That whole big man rotation. We have two viable big men in Landry, who's kind of small for a big man.
But so what we're saying is, so you're saying keep Okafor. You're saying that you would spend this money on David West, and I assume that if Landry could be had for the right price, you'd want him back too.
Mm-hmm.
But all we have heard this offseason is Demps and Williams say over, especially Williams, over and over and over again, we need to get longer, we need to get bigger. So if we keep those three guys in the core frontline rotation you're talking about, then what does he mean by that? He means adding a fourth big man is going to all of a sudden help the Hornets compete with the Lakers, a guy who's playing 10, 12 minutes a game? I mean, the fact that he just keeps saying this makes me feel like there's no way he wants to, you know, return next season with two undersized power forwards and an undersized center.
And I agree with you, but every time I go and try to figure this out, there isn't a center that can be had that's better than Okafor. If people grab themselves a center who's really good, they do everything then they can keep to keep that center. I mean, name one. I mean, Bynum is going to be a really high-priced guy. Dwight Howard is ridiculous. Talking about him is stupid. Tyson Chandler, if... there's no way we're going to match whatever the hell Mark Cuban is going to be able to throw at him. So unless, you know, Chris Paul is a bigger draw than a repeat championship run, you're not getting Tyson Chandler. I mean, I guess you could say Nene is a center, but he's not. That's the same problem. He's not bigger than Okafor, about the same size. So unless you're doing your fantasy trade, the McNamara fantasy trade with Portland, and just rolling the dice to see if Odin can actually play more than, you know, 10 games in a season, you're not finding anybody who's big enough to be better than Okafor at center.
Yeah, but I think I don't even know if better batters as much. I mean, who's a better center, Andrew Bynum or Tyson Chandler? Immaturity aside, Andrew Bynum is the better center. But Tyson Chandler was the better fit for Dallas because he provided the length and the dirty work. He doesn't need the ball in the post, whatever.
I'd rather have Tyson.
Yeah, you would as a fit. But in a vacuum, I don't think anybody could logically argue. And we can even say this for other centers who are undoubtedly more talented than Tyson. But anyway, I mean, I just, that's one point. The other point is I don't think anybody's saying that we'd be able to just go and steal somebody better than Okafor. But as I said before, I think most people would take an Iguodala D'Alembert combo over a J.R. Smith Okafor, especially the fact that this team is just undersized at every single position. There's no way that we're getting by in the Western Conference with the West Landry Okafor trio. I just don't see how those three are back long term. I can't envision it with Monty Williams just driving this point home over and over again this offseason. I mean, do you even think that Dell Demps is just operating under the assumption that he is gonna opt out basically what we have is this, you know, five or six man, or I guess it would be a six man roster essentially?
Well, I mean, let's just put it this way. You have stated that you have little birdies who've told you that that it's pretty likely he's not taking his option.
Right.
I would bet that Dell Demp's birdies are probably better than yours.
Yeah, his little tweeters.
So
yeah.
I would assume that he's probably got the information that you do too, that it's, he's not probably gonna opt out of his option. And so might as well plan for him not necessarily being part of the team.
Now, does Carl Landry's asking price come in anywhere? If, you know, David West, you said you'd be willing to go up to 11, but if you could lock in Carl Landry for 4.5, 5 tomorrow, you know, would you still pursue David West, or would you take that $6 million difference and basically spend it elsewhere on the team and just go with Landry as your primary power forward? Does one have to do with the other, or are they completely separate issues, Landry and West?
No, they definitely have. I mean, Landry cannot play any position but power forward. So there is no, you know, flexibility there. David West and David West is a power forward as well. So they are absolutely related to one another. It's not like you can say, I'll sign David West to Carl Landry, and, you know, I can afford to spend a little more on Carl Landry because I can always shift him to center or shift him to small forward and still get a good 20 minutes out of him. It's not the case. So if you can sign Carl Landry for $4 million, I'd sign David West and Carl Landry for 11 and 4 and be fine with it. But if you're approaching like 17 or 18 million for that position, for those two guys, I don't think that's worth it.
Yeah. So do you think that it's basically David West is a priority and they just let Carl Landry go? Or are they working both at the same time? I think that if West opts out, it could get overwhelming. And like I said, I just find it so hard to believe that they bring back three undersized guys in the front court. So what is going to be the strategy moving forward? Do you just wait on David West and risk losing Landry? Do you put a strong offer out to Landry immediately, even though you don't know what West will cost?
I think you have to put a strong offer out to Landry because Landry is going to be in demand. I think what he showed in the playoffs and what he's shown in the past has made him let me just scratch that. You just look at all of our different blogs in the True Hoop Network, and whenever a team needs a power forward, Landry's 1, 2, or 3 on those lists.
Think anybody needs a power forward.
What's that?
I don't think any teams need a power forward.
But they're not talking starters. They're talking like solid backup marginal starters.
Right, but how much are they going to pay for that?
They're all talking $5 or $6 million like we are. So, but I'm saying that if the Hornets don't put an offer out there right away of a comparable amount, I think he'll get like 4 or 5 offers in the first week, and he'll go. At least have to make that interest known. Because, I mean, these players do have big egos. So if Carl Landry's sitting there, and he played for the Hornets really well, and he's got, you know, 5 offers on the table from these other teams that immediately called him within 3 or 4 days, and the Hornets have just said, oh, wait on David West. he's leaving.
But see, I think there's enough quality options out there that I don't see a huge difference as far as which guy, one guy is going to take you to an extra round of the playoffs, Carl Landry or Big Baby Davis. I just think that there's so many other guys out there that essentially the win shares aren't going to be any different. I mean, I think power forward is a fairly deep position on the market, and I really think that it's a position that not many teams need. I think you could play a little bit of chicken with Landry. I honestly think that the biggest part of him signing somewhere else, the biggest thing that, you know, would be worrisome would be that the Hornets fans who finally came around on the Marcus Thornton trade now basically are furious again because it was just a 3 or 4 month rental. I think that factors in. But I don't think Landry, you know, is a huge difference as far as when you talk about win shares or this team's potential if you have Landry versus if you settle for a Big Baby Davis or a Kenyon Martin or, you know, even a Andre Kirilenko, who later in his career now he'll play the power forward more. I just think there's so many guys out there that it's not going to be a huge difference. I don't see Landry as much of a priority, especially if adding length is my priority in the offseason.
You stole my thunder there a little bit. Kirilenko?
Yeah.
He's the guy I was hoping that they would actually replace Landry with. I was going to bring that up a little later.
I'm sorry to steal it.
Although I have a feeling he might be looking for more, you know, impressive cities.
You better qualify that.
Qualify that? Okay.
Never be able to step
impressive, to impressive is the wrong word. He loves the nightlife, and so does his wife, who's a, you know, a major pop star in Europe. And he has said things about wanting to play in New York or Los Angeles.
Okay. So,
I mean, they want to be near the stars because he's married to a star. And plus, right, don't forget about Andre Kirilenko. He's got that one out a year where he can bang anyone he wants once a year. So, you know, go where the starlets are.
All right, I guess. I guess he sold it for him, but yeah, I definitely think the most interesting power forward ad would be, I mean, to me, the only team that could throw money at David West is New Jersey. And if New Jersey does that, they're not bringing Chris Humphreys back at the price tag that he's going to want.
Hence, you know, you said it. I wouldn't consider a David West Humphreys trade or basically swap to be unbelievably awful.
Not if it saved you enough money to, you know, get a, you know, spend that extra $4 to $6 million in another position of need.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd rather have Chris Humphreys and D'Alembert than David West and, you know, whatever minimum center.
Right.
So.
Aaron Gray?
I think Aaron Gray is going to get more than the minimum, but.
Yes, that's probably true. But I guess now we've come to the end of the second part of our podcast. The third part will be about the draft itself. That will be being posted on the site Wednesday, the day before the draft. So I hope all of you enjoyed part two and, of course, part one of our June 20th podcast. And I hope you all come back to listen to the third part soon. Have a great night. Thanks. Let's have that ball talk really each and every day.